The recent release of the National Climate Assessment added a degree, no pun intended, of seriousness to the discussion of global warming. The NCA is a very big and very detailed document available for download online. One of its features is a region-by-region assessment of ways in which climate has already changed and ways in which it could continue to change in the years ahead. Many people are studying the details of the National Climate Assessment. Those include the people at the environmental group Environment Oregon. Julian Boggs is the Federal Global Warming Program Director at Environment Oregon and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Julian, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is a very big report. Give us some idea of the scale and scope of it.
Well, about 800 pages, and has it's a report that is actually required by law, and this is the third version. The previous version came out 4 years ago. There was a lull in the mid-aughts, and we saw the first version around the turn of the century. And they've been, you know, a huge group of scientists and even larger, hundreds and hundreds of reviewers have been working to put together this document over the course of the last several years. So it's a huge, huge undertaking. And it's, I think, already been an incredible resource for advocates, for decision makers, especially at the local and community and state level, as well as, I think and I hope, listeners of the show find it useful, and the general public find it useful as well. It's certainly the most user-friendly and backyard-applicable climate report I've seen.
Backyard-applicable, that's an interesting term. How would people apply this report in their backyards?
Well, in all sorts of different ways that you might think. You can look at the warming projections ahead, and you can... we know that in Oregon, over the course of the last century or so, the temperature has increased on average 1.3 degrees. We know that days are becoming longer, and that can affect things like planting seasons, like when are you going to plant in your garden. It might also affect, as you're looking at whether or not flooding is going to increase in your area, whether or not you might want to invest in flood insurance or not, or, decisions like that, actually, more and more planners, and sometimes it might be an individual level, maybe somebody just wants to educate themselves about the changing, I think that's obviously incredibly valuable, the changes that are happening in the world. But what the administration is trying to do with this report and what President Obama set out to do in June 2013, when he announced his climate action plan for his second term, is he wanted his administration to be investing in applicable science, and that's really what this report is about. It's about science that individuals, local decision makers, state decision makers, and ultimately federal decision makers can use in everyday decisions and policy decisions and bureaucratic decisions.
So, Julian, is this third edition of the National Climate Assessment much more comprehensive than number two, and does it include the work of a lot more scientists?
It's certainly very comprehensive. I'm actually not able to really compare it to previous assessments. What I will say, it is certainly more user-friendly. I think the web has been a big part of that. So if you go to the National Climate Assessment website, I think the easiest way to do that is just type in a search for National Climate Assessment. You don't have to go through an entire 800-page PDF to view it. You can scan through the highlights and look through your particular region. There's fact sheets specific to the Northwest and even Oregon. And you might also be interested in seeing what's happening across the country. And the visual aspect of both the website and a lot of the materials that the administration has put out just make it a lot easier to read.
There is a region-by-region look at things, and it's not surprising that California and Oregon ended up in different regions. So the California is considered part of the Southwest for the purposes of the National Climate Assessment. Oregon, obviously, considered part of the Northwest. And there are certainly bullet points here about the key messages that are arrived at. Number one, and it's actually very similar for both Southwest and Northwest, changes in the timing of stream flow related to changing snowmelt are already observed and will continue, reducing the supply of water from any competing demands and causing far-reaching ecological and socioeconomic consequences. That alone sounds dire, because it sounds like drought is going to become more of a regular sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. And it's one of those things. A lot of times when we look at just the straight up numbers, you see a number like 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit will be the overall increase in temperature. But what that means as we're actually experiencing, it doesn't mean that on every day it is 1.3 degrees hotter than it was a century ago. It means we're seeing more record-breaking hot days and fewer record-breaking cold days. And the increase in hot days, and then, as you said, with the drought, we're actually seeing precipitation come in bigger bursts closer together, longer consecutive periods without rain. And so the distribution of weather patterns is changing, and that has enormous impacts on agriculture. It has enormous impacts on wildlife, you know, especially when you think Oregon and salmon. These are huge parts of the, you know, Oregon, not only culture and heritage, but economy as well. And they're really impacted by not just changes in the overall numbers of the averages, but the seasonal variabilities, as you say, and the way things change over the course of seasons.
You know, it's not going to be easy to read along if anybody wants to. Again, this is an 800-page-plus document, but it can be found online for either browsing or downloading at globalchange.gov. And you can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Julian Boggs at Environment Oregon about the National Climate Assessment. 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, our local phone number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Here is George in Wairika. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Julian Boggs.
Thank you very much. My daughter has been a long-term employee at the ski lodge down here in Mount Shasta. And my question concerns... Are the Mount Ashland and Mount Shasta ski huts a really good place to invest in?
That's a good issue, and I wonder where some lines might get drawn on the map to indicate what might be good, what might be bad. George, thanks for that question. Julian, anything specific that you're aware of in the National Climate Assessment that talks about ski areas specifically, or is it more general about snowpack?
Yeah, there's actually... It's interesting, and I think it speaks again to this issue of things changing. It's not just the averages that are increasing. So we're actually expected to see more snow accumulation during the winter, but an earlier snow melt. So by 2050, snow melt's actually projected to shift 3 or 4 weeks earlier than the earlier 20th century average. And even though we'll actually see significant snow accumulation because, the pattern in the Northwest is that we'll actually in some of these areas actually get more accumulation, especially during the winter as you get more of this warmer air, which, you know, can create snow. So, might see bigger snowfalls, heavier snowfalls, but actually we'll melt earlier, and that'll impact the ski season. And, In different parts of the country, the ski season is going to get hit worse than others, and I think the winter recreation industry is certainly one that is looking very fearfully and very closely at climate impacts and how that's affecting their industry, because it doesn't look good.
Well, the two ski areas that George mentioned at Mount Ashland was never able to open over this past winter, and Mount Shasta Ski Park was open for 5 days. So a very, very brief season in one case and a non-existent season in the other one. When you talk about the snow falling in greater amounts but probably melting earlier, anything in this assessment about snow water equivalence? Because I know that that's one of the major things that goes on in snowpack surveys, is they actually weigh the core samples to figure out how much water is actually within that snow.
You know, I didn't see anything that granular.
All right, so we have changes in the timing of stream flow for both the southwest and northwest parts of the country, which would affect both Oregon and California. In Oregon's key message, there's one here about in the coastal zone, the effects of sea level rise, erosion, inundation, threats to infrastructure and habitat, and increasing ocean acidity collectively pose a major threat to the region. This is, I mean, none of these sound anything less than really fairly dire.
Yeah. Our oceans are under a severe amount of stress. Our oceans are such an incredible, precious resource. you know, obviously, especially in coastal states like Oregon, where, you know, it's the same sort of thing. It's not only it's a part of the culture, it's a part of the heritage, it's a part of, it's a huge, you know, it's a part of the economy. And our oceans are under all sorts of stress, by and large, but climate is just an overarching stress. When climate scientists first started looking at carbon coming to the atmosphere, it was a little bit mystery, actually, why carbon wasn't increasing into the atmosphere as much as we thought. So the carbon in the atmosphere isn't as increasing as much as the amount of carbon that we're putting into the atmosphere from all the fossil fuels that we're burning. And the reason is that a huge percentage of it is being absorbed by the ocean. And that's actually changing the chemistry in the ocean that affects the way a lot of marine species, like oysters, like crustaceans, can survive, and how they can, you know, make shells and thrive as species. So wildlife species, all kinds of marine species who live on the coast are being negative impacted by all sorts of stresses that we are putting on the oceans right now. And climate is a major stressor.
So the ocean, a big player in what happens in the effects of climate change. The forests as well, though, and I see this both in the Southwest and the Northwest, that we got issues with warming, drought, and insect outbreaks. These are all linked to climate change?
Yeah. And I think one of the things that this report does really well is it talks about where different impacts intersect. So as I said, with the oceans, climate is a huge stressor. There are obviously other stressors in the ocean, and depending on the species and whether it's regulated or not, this can vary. But, overfishing can be a stressor. Waste in the ocean can be a stressor. There's all kinds of different, pollution can be a stressor. There's all kinds of different stresses that we're putting in the ocean and our forests and other ecosystems. And climate is compounding all of these in significant ways that can really tip the balance. And so forests are one of those things where they're actually a set of different stressors that might be making a forest less healthy. And some of these changes that we're talking about, whether it's water deficits because of extended consecutive periods of drought, that's going to increase tree stress. It's going to increase mortality. It's going to increase vulnerability to insects, which might be an invasive species, but the tree has less resilience now from the insect. So it also increases fuel flammability, and so you have more and more wildfires of greater magnitude and covering greater area, which is, again, compounded by other things like forest factors. So the factors are all compounded by each other. But we're seeing that overall, global warming is greatly increasing, dramatically increasing the stress on so many of our ecosystems.
Julian Boggs, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is with the group Environment Oregon, where he's the Federal Global Warming Program Director. We're talking about the National Climate Assessment, recently released, the third edition of it. More than 800 pages packed with information, including some key messages for different parts of the country. We're talking mostly about the Northwest, but also about the Southwest, which includes California. You can join our discussion on the Exchange about what's reflected in the National Climate Assessment and what to do with the information. 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Julian, back to forests. I mean, one of the more compelling parts of the key messages for the Northwest is the idea that we're talking about the transformation of forest landscapes. We're talking about because of the different stressors, bug kill, drought, different temperatures, that what we now assume to be, okay, this is a Douglas fir ecosystem, could be something else by the 2080s, the way this report sees it.
And, you know, that's I think the could is a key point there. And one of the key takeaways from the National Climate Assessment is that no matter how detailed our assessment is, no matter how precisely and with how much precision and how much data we look at the observed impacts and the projected impacts, there's a huge amount of variability. So do we know exactly what's going to happen with Oregon's forests? No, we know that they're under great risk, and we need to protect those. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot now from both climate scientists and more decision makers, is how do we manage that risk? What can we do now to lessen the risk that Oregon's forests dramatically change in ways that's going to really, harm the landscape of the state? And obviously the biggest way that we can do that is to reduce the pollution now that contributes to global warming, especially carbon pollution, and especially carbon pollution from the biggest sources like our power plants.
So is there anything in this report, and granted, I can't blame anybody for not having read the whole thing yet, but is there anything in here that's a particular surprise to Environment Oregon? Anything that your group went, oh, well, that's something we didn't expect in here?
We've known for decades that, what the key impacts of global warming are. And the research that was put into this report, this report is a compilation of research that's already out there. I think that some of the specifics, I think the biggest takeaway from the report is just how usable and how applicable it is to see the impacts to our forests all gathered together like this, to see the impacts of agriculture gathered together like this. I don't think that none of these impacts are new. I think it's one of the frustrating things for climate scientists, right? Climate scientists have been talking about the impacts for decades now, and a lot of policymakers and the public doesn't have the level of urgency and acceptance of this science that's shared by the scientific community. So I see this climate assessment as actually doing more to bridge that gap between acceptance in the scientific community and acceptance in the public and policymaking community, rather than to bring completely new information to the table.
It does seem like the response to this was perhaps a bit different. Of course, I don't watch Fox News very much, so I can't say what happened over there, but there was more of a sense of gravity and, yes, this is happening, where the debate up until recently seems to have been very much about global warming deniers in addition to facts demonstrating that global warming does in fact exist.
Yeah, I think we're certainly moving more and more in that trend. Even this last week you saw Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, which is a state that is, at ground zero for something when you talk about climate impact, when you talk about something like sea level rise. He came under a lot of fire over the weekend for statements he made indicating his kind of doubt around the scientific consensus for man-made global warming. And I think that you're seeing a general broader consistency in the public discourse that this is a fact. It's not a question of whether or not people believe global warming or not. It's a question of, well, these are the facts out there. What are we going to do about them? Of course, sadly to say, I think there is a misinformation campaign out there, and hopefully the National Climate Assessment will help combat that. And there are unfortunately two members of the decision-making class that don't accept the science of global warming, and I think that narrative is starting to change, and the discourse is starting to change. Just this week, we saw incredibly disturbing news from a couple different science teams out of Antarctica that the West Antarctic ice sheet has started to collapse. Very likely, we won't be able to stop it. And that we'll see severe sea level rise because of that.
That's an additional 4 to 8 feet, I think I read.
Yeah.
Onto sea level rise. If
I think 12. So I think, there's a range there, I think, but it's one of those things, there's a lot of things that, we don't know yet.
So, Julian, one of the first things you said about the National Climate Assessment was it's a really backyard applicable. So for folks who are listening thus far, and whether they do or do not dive into all 800 pages of the report, I should point out that a lot of those 800 pages are things like lists of scientists, so you can kind of skip those. What should people do, though? I mean, what's the first and foremost thing that any one person might think about doing as a result of the information contained in this National Climate Assessment?
I think we've got to do two things. One, we have to accept that it's happening and think about planning in your own life and just whether, again, it's your seasonal planting schedule or it's, you know, taking your kid out to those forests that might not be there. This, you know, making sure you get those moments in there with our nature, recognizing that the globe is warming, climate is changing, and there's nothing we can do to stop the amount that it's changing. On the other hand, and I think this is the most important thing, one of the things that the climate assessment makes clear is there's a huge difference in the future impacts depending on our actions right now. So I think this is a call to action, and I think that it's a call for folks to start planning in their own lives for climate change. And most importantly, so much of the planning in our society happens at the policy level and the decision maker policy. We have to be communicating to our decision makers that we need to be doing everything we can to reduce carbon emissions. That means switching more, investing in more solar power, more renewable energy, energy efficiency, more electric vehicles and ultra-efficient cars. Oregon has been a leader in renewable energy. It hasn't been exactly at the forefront, so we can do more. And I think that there's just a big opportunity to seize on a lot of these policies.
Well, a lot to be read and consumed if you decide you want to read the National Climate Assessment yourself. It's at globalchange.gov, available for browsing or download. Julian Boggs joined us here on the Jefferson Exchange. He is Environment Oregon's Federal Global Warming Program Director. Julian, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Hour two coming up, we'll talk about the tiny house movement with Dee Williams, author of The Big Tiny, coming up.